Sean, you've written what's often called the first draft of history for some of the biggest stories in the state, the Klaus Van Bülow attempted murder trials, Buddy Cianci and Plunder Dome, the credit union crisis, Central Falls filing for bankruptcy. I know there's so much to choose from, and it may not even come from this list. What story stands out for you?
The dominant story, I think, for most of my time here really was Buddy Cianci. Buddy 1, Buddy 2. I covered them both. He is an inescapable part of the Rhode Island landscape.
And I'm sure you two must have had an interaction. Is there a moment that you think about in your coverage?
Yes, actually, not a specific moment, but the totality of all the moments is that he rarely said no. Occasionally he did. During Plunder Dome, on the occasions where the day before I had caught one of the witnesses against him, prosecution witnesses were leaving the courthouse, and it was my job as the sidebar guy to try to get as many of those witnesses on camera as we could, knowing as you do that the federal courts don't allow electronic recordings. And so when I would get the witnesses who were most damaging to Buddy, the next day he would freeze me out.
Let's stay on politics for a bit. You're known for catching former President Bill Clinton off guard when he came to stump for Frank Caprio during the 2010 election. Getting a genuine moment like that from a politician, it's quite rare these days. How have you seen the packaging of politics change in your 30 years, and how has that affected your reporting?
First off, the premise of your question is accurate. It has changed. So as a matter just of simple access, it's much harder to get to these people. And that's huge, because in television, we can't be 10 feet away. We need the microphone. You know this from radio as well. We need the microphone close enough so that the viewers and the listeners can hear the answer.
And with Bill Clinton, you just worked the rope line and got your microphone right in there.
I did, because I thought to myself that it was somewhat unfair that the public had more access than professional reporters. We were all being kept back on a riser many, many feet away from the former president, and it didn't seem right to me that the very few people who were there in person would be the only people who would be able to speak to this man who has so much to say and so much to offer, not just for that campaign relative to Frank Caprio, but broader than that. And I tried to broaden out some of my questions. And happily, I was able to get close enough, and I was blessed with a loud, strong voice. And I also framed a question in advance in my mind as I was, you know, slicing my way through the crowd. I was thinking two things. What? Don't hit anybody and don't hurt anybody. And what will you say when the moment comes? Because you have to be ready in the moment.
And what did you ask the president about the economy, right? What is it about Rhode Island?
I asked him, yes, it was about the economy, but more specifically, and this is what I was actually somewhat proud of, I suppose, just in that rush of those 10 seconds and you're in this utter chaos. And I was trying to get him to expand on what he had said in his speech from the podium, that Rhode Island is this little laboratory, and I wanted him to talk about that laboratory. What did he mean by that? What makes Rhode Island different? And he answered, I thought, quite eloquently, that he thought that the ball bounces within a small enough sphere here that you can have an actual dialogue and actual results, and that problems should be more solvable here, at least in the abstract. Now, he hasn't lived here. He doesn't know.
So let's broaden the scope a bit to 30 years. How has political reporting changed from when you first started in television news to how it is now? Less access?
Slightly less access, but happily in Rhode Island, that Clinton scenario that we just went through is rare. There's almost total access here. What I think has changed more than access is speed, lack of time. We're constantly having to produce whatever we just got as against thinking about what we just got and reflecting on what it might mean in some larger context other than here's what he said. That's one level of reporting, but the better level for me, and I know for you and for really any reporter who's been at this any length of time, you want to at least have a few minutes to step back and think, what's the cosmic significance of it all?
And I want to talk to you about the speed of the news cycle here in a bit, but I also want to talk about the job of just being a reporter, because it's a job that doesn't get any easier. Every day you have to learn something new. You don't necessarily know what it's going to be that day. You have to be an expert on pension overhauls or the cost of natural gas or municipal bankruptcy. Has that been your experience as well?
Yes, and it is one of the reasons that I'm now hanging up my microphone for the moment. You've hit the nail on the head right there. It doesn't get easier. You would think it would. You get better at process. You get better at writing. You get better at, I think, the access to these people because they know you and you know them, and they know that really you will be fair, even if they sometimes try to play the public game of, you know, don't beat me up or whatever, this or that. But the speed with which it now all happens has, you know that old expression, a change in degree is a change in kind. And by that I mean that by speeding it up so fast, it's no longer the same animal.
And let's talk about speed. How have you seen news, specifically television news, change in the 30 years you've worked in the business? You know, my dad is a former news guy, and he would talk about, well, I had to wait until my film got developed so I could think about my story. That's your experience as well, I take.
I would like to think I'm somewhat younger than your dad just by looking at you and trying to do the math here. But I also started at the very end of film. There was film at NBC News in Washington where I started, and then film in New Orleans, Louisiana, where I went on the air. And then I came up to Rhode Island in 1981, and there was no film. And your father's so right. Nobody designed it that way. It was an accidental gift. That while the film was in the soup, as we called it, meaning the processing lab, we had time to reflect, to contemplate. What does this mean? What do I have? And sometimes you don't know what you got until you think about what you have.
And now we have social media and smartphones. And I see the influencing our business in two ways. The first way is now everybody has the Associated Press on their phone. So I've noticed nobody asks me, how do you know what's news anymore? People used to ask me that. And as soon as smartphones and apps came online, nobody really asks me that. But also a few years back, I was covering President Obama and I saw a reporter tweeting on one hand, doing a radio interview on another hand, and trying to set up his tripod for his camera somewhere in between. And I thought, there is no good journalism happening there. We have to feed so many beasts now, Twitter, Facebook, and then our regular mediums and blogs. Did you wrestle with that as well?
Absolutely. And what's happening while you're tweeting, or no matter how great or talented any of us is, we literally can really, in the end, only do one thing at a time. This idea of multitasking, I think that term itself is inaccurate. It captures the wrong sense of it. All you can ever do is one at a time. You can't literally do two things at once.
And yet that expectation is there.
It is there, and it's damaging. And I fret about this more than I maybe should.
Sean Daly, you're known in Rhode Island for being the tall guy in the media pack, booming out the tough questions. Are you worried about not being there to ask those tough questions?
I'll miss it. I can tell you that. I will absolutely miss it.
Rhode Island is often described as a candy store for journalists. Are you going to miss covering the state? Will you be screaming at your television?
Here's what I expect. When I see the next big thing happening somewhere, no, I will not be screaming at my television. I'll be doing something even crazier, potentially, jumping in my car and going there. I can honestly see myself, and this is nuts. So shoot me if you think this is just way over the top. But if there would be if I just see this sort of event that I just know if I hung out for a couple of hours and if I happen to have a couple of hours, how could it get better? To be able to observe it and not to be on deadline and not to have to tweet, to not have to, you know, get a couple of quick still shots, to not have to get a quick little video cut and feed the video cut back and this and that and yada, yada. Meanwhile, thinking always about the next shows, not just the most immediate show, but you have then the later shows. We have noon, we have 5, we have 5:30, we have 6. It's always on your mind. What's next? What's next? Oh, I can use this for that. But how would I sort it all out? To just be at the event and enjoy it?
So besides interloping on press conferences, Sean Daly, you're a young guy. What's next for you?
Wow. Now, there's the big question. Whatever bubbles up that floats my boat. I have multiple hobbies. I have a huge family. I have one of 8 children. But mainly seeing what might work on retirement isn't, I don't think, stopping. It's slowing down. And I would expect to do some of what I've been doing in some lesser way. Teaching comes immediately to mind because that doesn't involve what we've been talking about is learning new information every day. That's what you and I do every day. And that's the hard part. But the process by which it gets on the air and by which you do get a Bill Clinton interview, for example, the loud voice, the clear question, the you know, learning to dive through the crowd, those process elements, I think I could offer. I have something to offer the younger people, the kids, the college students.
All right. Sean Daly, former reporter, newly recovering journalist, maybe not so recovering. Your unofficial catchphrase, will Rhode Island survive this? Well, it's to be seen whether Rhode Island will survive your retirement. Thank you for joining us, Sean.
Thank you for having me.